Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.
Welcome back to another Quick Restart podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by Quint Kusnick on Monday morning. As Quint, what a weekend it was. You were at the hockey regionals. You called 4 games worth of action. I did not have time to pay attention to that at all. Fortunately, this is not a college hockey podcast. But of course, we needed to wait for the action to come down in College Park, Maryland, where the number one Penn State Nittany Lions jumped out to an 8-1 first quarter lead. Grant Ament left the game momentarily with an injury and then returned in a limited capacity. Maryland started to chip away, cut it to 8-7, and then Penn State pulled away for the 13-10 victory to secure their spot, atop the polls and to score the Nittany Lions' first victory versus Maryland. Potentially ever, it depends on which college's athletic department stats you trust. Quint, how'd you holding up this morning?
I'm doing well. I'm still running on adrenaline. I could hardly sleep last night. It's been the last 2 weeks have been my busiest are historically my busiest 2 weeks of the year with the wrestling tournament. Then did that Tuesday great game against Princeton, Denver, and then covered 4 hockey games this weekend, all while keeping my eye on the lacrosse world. I got to give BTN a lot of credit because putting that game in a Sunday night standalone 7 o'clock position is masterful. And, you know, the fans really get to go to high school games. You get to watch your games on Saturday. When it's all over, you sit down in front of the TV on Sunday night at 7 o'clock and you got the best 2 teams in the country playing. So hats off for BTN for that programming. Penn State's got to be unanimous number one, correct?
I would say so. It's very hard to come up with the number two.
Well, I got Maryland at number two. They've done nothing. Okay. You know, they have the loss to Penn State. They have a road loss to Notre Dame. And then after that, it's a jumbled mess, honestly. I really struggled putting Loyola 3 because of their defense. Virginia's on a roll. Duke's up and down. How high do we put Penn? What do you do with Yale? We had 4 of the top 5 teams lost, 6 of the top 10. So it's not like you can easily replace somebody at 3, 4, 5, and 6 with somebody else at 8, 9, 10, and 11. I mean, Notre Dame's hanging in there. What do you do with Cuse? Denver's up and down. UMass continues to roll. Towson, I was unimpressed with their win over Hofstra. Ohio State had an opportunity to be a 1, 2, or 3. They couldn't capitalize. So this thing is wide open. I can't remember an April that sets up the way that this one does.
It's well said, especially in the context of college sports. One of the comments that my friends and I shared coming away from this Elite Eight men's basketball tournament was that it was the best of our lifetime. So it really does feel like a special moment in the world of college sports. But for this one, how impressed are you by Penn State showing the mettle to build an early 7-goal lead? Not, you know, we've seen that before, particularly out of good teams that have buzzsaw offenses. Withstand a little bit of adversity in terms of a player who did not play a week earlier against Cleveland State and missed the 2018 season due to injury and has been their best player. Leave the field. Your opponent, who has been a historical bugaboo, comes back and cuts it to a 1-goal lead. And from that point on, you outscore them 5-3. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, you answer the flurry. You know, Penn State, their offense, when given possessions, has been unstoppable this year. Okay, we've seen that against Yale. They had limited possessions and still got to double digits and gave the Bulldogs everything they can handle. Maryland has a good face-off. They have 2 good, capable Fogos. They struggled in that department. So until somebody can square off with Gerard Arcari and get that 50-50, I think you can score on Penn State. But if they possess the ball, that offense between Ament and O'Keefe, potentially the best 1-2 punch in a year that's defined by great 1-2 punches. If you read my poll, I list 5 Batman and Robin combinations that are almost historical in what these guys, the numbers that these athletes are putting up this year, whether it's Spencer and Lindley, Sowers, Teton Peterson, Ament and O'Keefe, Nolting and Young down at High Point. And there's others, you know, Krause and Laviano. We're seeing a level of offensive lacrosse now with the shot clock, that is unprecedented.
There's no question about it. One guy who really stood out to me for the Nittany Lions was Jack Traynor. I believe it was either Penn State's second or third goal. He took a feed from O'Keefe, who, my comment about him is he might be the most underrated player in college lacrosse right now. I think a lot of people think about him as a scorer shooter, particularly a lefty shooter. And what he showed in terms of his ability to carry, and particularly in terms of his ability to feed, on this goal I'm talking about, he carried from X against a shorty. Long stick was quick to slide from the crease to him. He threw through that long stick, and Jack Traynor caught it. And granted, I don't know if the pass was in the perfect position because it required a very acrobatic finish, but Traynor caught it and then backhanded the goal while falling down. It was definitely one of the highlights of the weekend for me.
You know, when you look at Penn State, it's a balanced offense. Obviously, you have the 1-2 punch, and teams have not had a defender who can handle Amen's quickness, his change of direction behind the goal, his ability to skip, to find O'Keefe and others, and then much like Yale last year, we have really good middies who can dodge off a ball movement, whether it's step downs or against, an approach. When you're sloughing against Penn State and Ament then hits the perimeter, you're rushing out at a man. And that's an ideal dodging situation. And Penn State has more than a handful of middies who can capitalize. So this offense right now is the best in the country, in my eyes. The questions loom. Can they sustain success in April? Okay, they got some big games coming up. There's a game on ESPN on April 21st. It's Hopkins at Penn State that I'm covering, Easter Sunday. They still have to play a lot of tough games in the Big Ten. And you don't want to peak too early because you're dealing with a team that's never won a playoff game. Okay, that's going to hang over all of their NCAA games. They'll be super fired up for that first round game. How do they deal with the pressure of the quarterfinals? How do they handle championship weekend if they in fact get there? Their coach has been there, but no athlete on that team has ever experienced it. And so that'll be a disadvantage come May. But that's still a long way away.
Well, let's go ahead and hear from Grant Ament and Chris Sabia.
Chris, what was working well in the first quarter, and what were you guys trying to take away from Maryland's attack today?
So, I mean, we came in with a game plan of kind of just playing together. And we knew if we got back to the fundamentals, like Coach was saying, and we just played like close-knit and tight, that our game plan was going to hopefully work out.
And Grant, for you, what were you seeing in the first quarter that the attack was exploiting so well against Maryland's defense?
Yeah, I mean, we were just moving the ball very well. I don't know what the percentage was, but the amount of assisted goals that we had in that first quarter, I know Mac had that step-back shot, but I think every single other one was assisted. When the ball's flying around and we're going east to west on from the righty wing to the lefty wing, it's very hard for a goalie to be able to track that when he's spinning. And then I think once that second quarter came around, we kind of got away from that, and the goalie, their goalie, give him a lot of credit. He made some great saves. And then third quarter, we kind of started dialing back in, but definitely need to continue to stress the importance of getting that ball moving east-west, because it's not only a lot of fun to play in that offense, but it obviously, we get a lot of points out of it. So we got to just continue to press that.
Well, the game gets to 8-7, and certainly the battle was joined, the crowd's going crazy. What conversations are you having in your huddles, and then what happened to give you that burst that you took the lead back?
Yeah, I mean, just kind of stay in the course. And there's the great thing about college lacrosse is there's just so many dips and valleys. And for us, just being able to stay even keeled and understand that we're up a goal. And then Cole Willard comes in and puts one home. And him, Coach, and I were just talking. Him, Jack Traynor, Jack Kelly. I mean, guys that don't necessarily get a lot of love always. Those three guys stepped up big when we needed it, and that's why it was just a great overall team win tonight against a really good team.
Grant, first of all, how you feeling? And second of all, kind of building on that, you know, a lot of times whenever we've talked, you talk about a lot of the other guys on your team. How rewarding is it for you, as you know, there's been times when you've had to step back, whether last year or this last game, that other guys have kind of made this a more balanced team?
Yeah, it kind of said it. different guys are able to step up. You know, I wasn't probably after that second quarter, probably wasn't at my best. But, you know, Jack Kelly dodged his rear end off for those two quarters and did tremendously. Dan Rayum did very well. And then I just said Cole Willard gave us a spark when we needed it. It feels very good to lean back on, because when it comes to the playoffs, we're going to need to lean back on those guys. And it's not always going to be the top guys necessarily. So those role players did a phenomenal job tonight, and give them a lot of credit.
Did you guys get a chance to look around, sort of step outside of yourself and go, this is really cool, at those moments, like you said, when the crowd was going and the game was on the line?
I would say not until the end of the game. Not until that final whistle blew. Right. We've talked about it before, just a don't blink mentality, and just continue to push until you hear that final whistle blow.
Yeah, I mean, it was really nice, and it was great to finally get that win against Maryland. But, I mean, we'll see them again. We have a long road in Big Ten, so we're just excited for our next game and kind of on to the next one mentality.
All right, Quint, one of the big results of the weekend was the defending champions heading to Penn, a Quaker team that started 0-3 with three of the best losses available to Penn State, Maryland, and Duke. Only the Duke loss was one-sided, and they handed the Yale Bulldogs a 13-12 triple overtime defeat. Sam Hanley ended it. Goalie Reed Junkin made 22 saves, and faceoff specialist Kyle Gallagher was nearly even with T.D. Erland. I thought this was a really important win psychologically for the Quakers. Post-game, Hanley said this one was for our seniors. They had not beaten Yale, and it felt like every year they were ending our season, including last year, in which the Bulldogs put up one of their most impressive showings in just blottoing the Quakers in the Ivy League semifinals.
Well, Hanley had a balanced year, you know, 32 points. Goldner's the finisher. He's as good a shooter as you'll see. Mathias is the orchestrator. And then they're getting lower-level production, you know. Lully, Dunn, Bartolo, they're having guys step up at times. And then you look at Reed Junkin, and I go back to that overtime game years ago. I'll never forget it, what he did in a losing effort in like a triple overtime game. I remember it. He's a guy with tons of experience and big game experience. So this was a turning point for Penn in that they stood toe-to-toe with the quote-unquote bullies of the Ivy League. And it sets up an Ivy League tournament at Columbia that's going to be intriguing. You know, Yale still got work to do to get there. Penn's in a good spot. Cornell, if they can hold serve, should be there. And then the game of the weekend in that conference was Brown, after falling behind to Princeton, rallied to beat the Tigers 14-10 at a time where you thought Princeton was ready to make a run coming off that Tuesday win over Denver. So it looks like Brown will be the fourth team in unless they squander their advantage right now. They're 2-0 in the Ivy, and Princeton is kind of behind the eight ball and may be left out. Michael Sowers may not play once again in the Ivy League tournament.
I want to follow up on Yale, because in post-game comments, Coach Andy Shea was apparently, I don't know what the right word is, whether it was incredulous or stunned or grasping for answers, but I wouldn't be very quick to press the alarm button if you're a Bulldog fan, because when you look at the 2018 season results, it features an opening game, one-goal loss to Villanova, seven straight wins, a little bit of a head-scratching 9-8 loss to Bucknell on April 4th, and then six straight wins before losing to Cornell in the Ivy League final and then winning their last four games. And so, basically, the only difference between last year and this year so far is that Penn is a league opponent where Bucknell was an out-of-conference game. Obviously, there's some differences, and there's some, you know, kind of historical perspective, hindsight 2020 situation to this. But at the same time, are you concerned about Yale, or do you think that they're on a good trajectory?
Well, when you look forward, okay, they have five games in the regular season remaining. They'll be favored in all those games, and they should win all those games. Dartmouth, Brown, Albany, Quinnipiac and Harvard. That's before the Ivy League tournament. Okay, so let's say they go on a run. What is concerning to me, Terry, is their defense. Okay, they're giving up goals. They're giving up double digits on a weekly basis. Okay, 11 to Villanova, 13 to Penn State, 11 to UMass, 11 to Michigan, 11 to Cornell, 10 to Princeton, 13 this week to Penn. That's a lot of goals, considering that they've had a significant face-off advantage in most of those games. So something is wrong with Yale's defense. I talked about it in our broadcast when we were in New Haven. You know, the shorty position is not as strong. They lost Jason Alessi. They lost Tyler Warner, two of the best shorties in the country from last year, guys who they didn't really have to slide to. And you think about that. Now they've become a defense that's going to have to slide, react, recover. They're going to have to cover up for one another. They've got some poles playing down low. Their goalie, Jack Starr, started the season cold. He's played really well the last two games. That's a good sign. But this defense is not the same. And that's what they have to figure out over the next five games.
It's well said. I think your point is well taken in terms of last year they had that signature non-conference late season matchup against Albany. They don't have that this year based on the way that the Great Danes are playing. And so the question of how tested will they be heading both into the Ivy League tournament and presumably the NCAA tournament remains a fair one. I wanted to follow up on your point about Princeton. It is head-scratching to me once again that they played Yale tough. It was a game that seemed closer throughout than that five-goal final margin. They beat Denver. To lose to Brown in this situation,
yeah,
speaks to their inconsistency.
Young, again, a team that doesn't play great defense. They do some funky things on faceoffs. They're not getting great goaltending. They have capable scorers. I was really impressed with some of their offensive options. But to take a lead in that game, it was the game of the year for Princeton. I mean, when you look at it, they needed to beat Brown. And now they're in a spot where really, even if they hold serve, they don't control their own destiny anymore. And that's unfortunate to be on April 1st, and now you're reliant on others. That's a hard situation for Princeton Tiger fans, because I thought they took a quantum step forward, standing toe-to-toe with Denver on a night that Bill Tierney returned to campus. He was looking for win number 400. They were good, man. They were tough. They were fast. George Bond was awesome. Sowers controlled that game. I really thought that was a launching pad for the next 3 or 4 weeks where Princeton was going to assert themselves as a top four team in the Ivy League, and they give it all back. It's, you know, one step forward, two steps back, and that's what it's been like for Princeton over the last 2 years. One step forward, two steps back.
Down in Carolina, we saw a Tar Heel team that has been aptly described similarly as one step forward, two step back, take on their rivals from down North Carolina, Route 15, and send the Blue Devils home with a 10-8 defeat. I was really impressed by this one for a variety of reasons, and it starts with the Tar Heel freshman class, particularly in this game. Goalie Caton Johnson, who made his debut, stopped 21 Blue Devil shots. North Carolina got points from 10 different guys, including freshman Brian Cameron, who had 2 goals, and Nikki Solomon, who had a goal and an assist. This game really hinged in a late third quarter sequence when the Tar Heels responded to 3 consecutive Nakai Montgomery goals with 3 goals of their own in the last 90 seconds of the third quarter, and took a lead that they held on to for the entirety of the final frame. Post-game, Duke coach John Donowski said that his team just isn't very good right now, and he cited a lack of leadership from an individual. He commended his team for their effort, how much they care, but called them mild-mannered and said that there isn't an individual who leads this team. We have to do it as a group, and he acknowledged that that was going to be hard. So after what was probably a high watermark right around their dominant win in a weekday game versus Loyola, the Blue Devils have struggled in recent weeks, particularly losing a pair of ACC contests, this one and last week outside in Syracuse in overtime.
Yeah, and in the process, Duke has probably squandered the ability to host the ACC tournament this year. Again, there's a new format. They're playing a 4-5 game, April 29th, a Thursday. And then the semifinals are hosted by the number one seed. The semifinals are in Chapel Hill. automatically. And then the championship will be hosted by the highest remaining seed. So Carolina keeps themselves alive. Duke struggles to me are offensive. You know, while I love Brad Smith, I don't see a first-team All-American on that Duke roster on offense right now. Nakai Montgomery tried to take that game over. Duke's attack isn't the typical Duke attack. They're not running in transition off of stops, and I think there's more there because they do have run-out opportunities. We've seen Cade Van Raphorst improve his game as a ball handler up the field. JT Giles-Harris is good at grounders, but their long stick middies and shorties have not pushed transition. So when you think of Duke teams historically, they score in every way. John Danowski talks about it. Got to get your 6-on-6 goals. You get your riding goal. You get your face-off goal. You get your transition goal. You get your extra man goal. They're not doing that right now. They're not getting balanced scoring, and we've seen low goal totals from Duke against Syracuse. Their offense was poor in the second half, and then they only score 8 goals. Again, they run into a hot goalie. It's twice this year we've seen freshman first-time starters just kind of blow up and freak out. You know, remember Patrick Birkinshaw did it? Virginia's goalie at Princeton, 24 stops. And then this week, Carolina's Caton Johnson with a remarkable performance. Let's see if he can back it up. I know what that's like when you first start and you feel like you're floating on air. So Duke's put themselves in a position not good. Carolina stays alive. And the Heels at Virginia, Syracuse, and then they finish up with Notre Dame. So it's a tough slate for Carolina, but there's hope there now. And all of a sudden, they're 7-3, and they have a win. They finally have a win. You know, they had beaten a lot of teams with poor records, but they re-enter the conversation as a viable at-large team if they can win probably 2 more games.
And I take a look at their 3 losses, and in the context of this Duke win, it looks a little different. There's no question that Maryland dominated them, and that was one of the more impressive showings of the season. But a 1-goal loss to Johns Hopkins in the mud and a 2-goal loss to Denver in an early morning game.
Yeah.
It's not as if there's a black mark necessarily in terms of a loss that should keep this team out of the NCAA tournament.
No, I agree. I definitely agree with you. And this was a season-saving win by the Heels, who must now be considered in that group of teams vying for those final at-large spots. You know, it's not – their schedule turned up to be a little soft. I mean, honestly, you know, Mercer and Furman haven't been strong this year. Harvard's not having a great season as well. And then they've lost their bubble, quote-unquote bubble games, as you said, against Hopkins and Denver. Come back to beat Marist, Bucknell, and Cleveland State. And I think everyone expected Duke to win, especially given the fact that Carolina went with this younger roster. So we'll see how that looks long-term. There's talent down there. They got to do it again, though. Okay, that's not enough just to beat Duke 10-8. They need to get two or more wins, I think, to be a legitimate at-large contender. We'll check out the RPI numbers. I can't find RPI anywhere right now. Maybe you can. But they stay in the hunt, and that's huge. You need hope. You know, you hate to turn the page from March to April and put yourself in a position where you're out of the league race. You know, we talk about the NCAA tournament being only, 16, 17, 18 teams. The reality is the bracket's a lot deeper than that, as we know. And you got 9 AQs, 9 times 4 is 36. That's 36 teams vying for a spot, and that really starts now in April. Get into your conference tournament. Stay alive. Continue to extend the season. And Carolina did that.
Stay alive. That gave me chills. Shades of Last of the Mohicans. But let's go ahead and hear from North Carolina coach Joe Bresci.
Big win. Understatement?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we talked all week about the new season beginning. And, you know, we had a great meeting Monday, that a players-only meeting. Then we had a team meeting that lasted, you know, probably total with the players and the staff about 45 minutes, and just talked about how, you know, we all have to sacrifice, we all have to do a little bit more as the new season begins. Whatever happened in the past is done. Let's learn from it and get ourselves better. And we played with great energy, and it felt like a new season. When you're playing your rival to kick off the ACC, you know, it just feels different. And, you know, we certainly learned from last week, and the guys busted their tail and we played like we practiced. We've been practicing hard, but we haven't been playing hard in games for 60 minutes. You know, we had a second quarter lapse last week that cost us 7-1. But at the end of the day, you saw a lot of different faces and a lot of guys contributing, and that's what we talked about is playing hard, smart together.
Is that one of the most complete games you guys have played this season?
No question. I got to go back and look at the offsides and all the little mistakes that we made, but our man down was stout. And we look at the sensational performance in his first start against Duke. Caton Johnson was just 21 saves. And I'm not sure when that has happened before. Certainly hasn't happened recently. And for him to do that and really uplift the defense, it allows you to gain more and more confidence. But what I'm most proud of is when we came, we were in the third quarter, we did stub our toe a little bit. They took advantage of opportunities, went up 8-6, and we were relentless. We kept coming and coming and didn't let that affect us like it has in other games. Kind of diffused us a little bit in the past, but for us to respond against a great team like Duke is pretty special.
Some nervous moments, a lot of procedural penalties offside. Is that because of new personnel or just timing or
combination?
Some changes?
Combination of it. You know, we got a lot of, eight or nine freshmen playing. Nine freshmen played today, so they're new at this a little bit. Three freshmen starting on attack, and freshman goalie and middies all over the place. So to get your feet wet in this game, you know, some great plays made and some other situations that we got to continue to cover and improve on.
Caton had only played 8 minutes before today, this season. What were you seeing in his game in practice that made you think, you know, this guy, he deserves a shot today?
We have faith in all our goalies, and I think what Caton has shown is a consistent development over time. I think you work with the upperclassmen to start the year, guys who are veterans have been there, but he had just continued to improve, and we felt, you know, it was his time to get an opportunity. But we have faith in all our goalies. So he was sensational today, and hopefully he'll continue to build on it. The defense will build on it moving forward.
You mentioned playing a complete game. You had eight guys score your 10 goals today. So what does that well-rounded effort mean to you?
Well, that's what we talked about. We talked about, you know, great motion and everybody being a part of it and not worrying who scores. And we played that way. I mean, I thought fourth quarter in particular, we rushed some shot clock opportunities. We took the first instead of making them move more. So those are things we can work on. But, you know, we've preached it. You know, Coach Metz does a great job offensively, and Coach Unterstein does a phenomenal job defensively. They're trusting the system, and I think Bob gave that confidence to the defense in front of them.
Quint, another meaningful result that I think not a lot of people saw coming. The Scarlet Knights of Rutgers open up Big Ten play, handing the undefeated Ohio State Buckeyes a 14-6 loss in Columbus. This game was on ESPNU. Rutgers was led by Kieran Mullins, 4 goals and 4 assists, and Max Edelman's 17 saves. For me, that save number is really representative of the way in which this one unfolded, because the number of times it felt to me with Ohio State trailing, say, 8-4, and somebody like Jack Jasinski gets a look underneath his man, you know, a solid S dodge, gets to the crease, and Edelman just fills it up. There's nowhere to go with the ball, and it ends up right in his gut for another one of those 17 saves. That, to me, was the story of this one. And on the broadcast, Paul Carcaterra kind of acknowledged as much, saying it just was one of those days where the ball did not bounce Ohio State's way. That being said, those are the breaks of the game, and it's a big win for Rutgers.
Yeah, you know, Mullins is a proven commodity now, having a great season. They made some shifts. Ryan Gallagher moved to attack. Tommy Coyne moved to midfield. They have some defenders. You know, I like Kyle Pless a lot. And then Edelman is a guy who's been around forever, and he stepped up. So, again, what lies ahead for Rutgers is a huge game on Saturday at 2 o'clock on ESPNU against Hopkins. And if Rutgers had lost to Ohio State, the Rutgers-Hopkins game would virtually have been a play-in game for the Big Ten and NCAA tournament. As it is, it's a gigantic game. You know, those teams are vying for, let's say, spots 3, 4, and 5 in the conference tournament. Remember, we got Maryland, Penn State, likely to be 1-2. Who's going to be 3, 4, 5? Either Rutgers, Johns Hopkins, or Ohio State's going to get left out of the Big Ten tournament. And in the process, they will get left out of the NCAA tournament. So this game Saturday, Hopkins and Rutgers, is huge. And maybe Rutgers is peaking later in the year than they have in the past. You know, they've struggled. You know, they've lost games that I didn't think they should lose. But again, you know, hope is there for them. And if they're coming into their best games, then they'll have every chance to get in the tournament this year after being a perennial snub.
Well, keeping with the theme of conference tournaments, two results that warrant significant mention: Villanova 15, Marquette 11, Denver 16, Georgetown 9. I had Villanova replace the Hoyas in my top 20 this week.
Yeah, I dropped Georgetown out. I didn't replace them with Nova, but you know, Nova is inconsistent. They have their moments where they can play with anybody in the country, and they have other head-shaking moments. So I'm not sure what to do with them. It was a big step back for Georgetown, who all of a sudden, you know, not looking like the title contender in that league. And it was a great bounce back for the Pioneers. You lose on Tuesday. They had a brutal road trip. You know, they stayed east after playing Towson, that 7-6 win. I think they were a little out of gas on Tuesday night when we saw them. They went home. They get healthy. I think that team will get better and better. They're dealing with some defensive issues, obviously. Dylan Johnson lost for the season. Still trying to figure it out. They hit a bunch of pipes against Princeton. I like their offensive personnel, and they got it cooking. And congratulations to Coach Tierney picking up win number 400. You know, that Denver's a team now who should make a run, solidify themselves as a team to beat in that league. And after that, it's kind of wide open, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think one result that we would be remiss to mention is Providence got their Big East opening win in overtime with an 8-7 victory over St. John's. I don't see Villanova's resume the same way that you do. They lost a 10-goal margin at Penn State in their season opener and then reeled off three straight, including handing Yale what was their lone loss of the season. Win over Hofstra, you mentioned with respect to Towson, doesn't carry a lot of weight. But they beat Delaware by 8 goals, and the Blue Hens are 8-2. They then lose a two games in three days situation, a 2-goal loss to Penn, which now looks very good. The loss to Drexel is the only outlier, and then they lose to Maryland. They've now won 3 straight road wins over Fairfield, Brown, and as we mentioned, most recently Marquette. The Wildcats are 6-4. Again, it's only that loss to Drexel in the 2 games in 3 day situation that is to a team that was better than them. And now They have 2 quality wins, I would say, over Yale and Marquette. And that win over Delaware is sneaky good.
Yeah, you're right, because Delaware's 8-2. That's a valid point, Terry. This is a tough time of year for polls.
Yep.
And you better be doing your work as you are. And you make a really, really valuable point. I was looking for some power rankings and some RPIs to see, you know, who's beaten teams with good records and such. I couldn't find any, but that's a valid point. You know, I will also point out Mount St. Mary's.
Yes.
You know, Richmond continues to get votes, and Richmond lost to Mount St. Mary's earlier this year on like a Monday or Tuesday night. And I think a lot of pollsters missed that result.
Yep.
Because since then, Mount has wins over Richmond, Sacred Heart, Bryant, and Robert Morris. And so anyone giving Richmond, based on their win over Notre Dame, a top 20 vote, needs to look at Mount St. Mary's resume a little closer also. So it's a tricky time of year for polls. The Mountaineers, though, having a year this year, unlike any other that I've seen from them. They're doing a great job, and they're poised to, you know, be a high seed in their conference.
No question. Keep an eye on their April 20th matchup at Hobart as what will determine the top of the NEC. It looks like.
Yeah, what's Hobart right now? 8-1, 9-1?
Yeah, and they've got.
With a huge game against Cuse, the midweeker this week.
It's the game of the midweek for sure. 7 o'clock start. Make sure you find that one online. The only other game, speaking of which, that I wanted to talk about was Notre Dame's 13-10 win over Syracuse. And for me, the story coming away from this one was, once again, the Fighting Irish are giving up second-half runs. They were fortunate in this one, both in terms of the size of the first half lead that they built, and then a couple of key moments went their way late. This game feels like it was played a week and a half ago based on all the action that's unfolded since. But it started the weekend, Saturday noon on ESPNU. How concerned are you about Notre Dame's inability to close out games?
Well, I like Notre Dame a lot. They have been inconsistent, no doubt. You jump up 11-3 on Syracuse, you expect to take that one to the wire with a nice cushion. They made it interesting, as you said. The good news is that they scored 11 goals in the first half, and Syracuse once again slow starting this year. I mean, there was what, four straight games going into this one where Syracuse had spotted their opponent leads and finally caught up to them. It was the first true road game for Cuse. I think they'll move forward off of that. It's a good learning experience. They had seven at home. I mean, that's there's something to be said for playing so many home games, even though one was played outdoors. But you know, I like this Notre Dame team. I think their young talent, you know, the freshman and sophomore offensive players are more gifted than in the past. They're more athletic. The defense is what it is. I'm not sure how strong they are in the face-off game and in goal. And so that's, you know, that can lead to opponent runs. Anytime, you know, you're sub 500 in those categories, you're vulnerable to giving up chunks at a time. And that perhaps is a case for Notre Dame. But a good win and you know, a really positive step forward. Let's see now if Notre Dame can build on it, because they've been a kind of, as I said earlier, one step forward, one step back type team. I got them ranked at number 8. You know, I think they're a team that can make some big time noise if they can continue to improve. These youngsters have to get better. You know, the freshman wall looms for many in mid-April. You know, the freshman wall is there. It's a something. You know, it's a long season. These guys have been grinding since early January. How will Notre Dame's young players react? Some improve and bust through it, and we've seen show up on championship weekend and play great, and others kind of fade. So Notre Dame's still in the mix. I think Syracuse offensively a little challenged at times. You got Curry. You're still missing Dordovic. The attacks, Voigt's a good finisher inside. I love Kennedy. They're getting good goal play from Drake Porter. The faceoffs have been a positive surprise, but you know, you got to show up ready to play off the bus.
Well, Quint, we appreciate you playing on adrenaline. It is that time of year, both for freshmen and for broadcasters and for fans of lacrosse. Make sure to check out Quint's Top 20 on InsideLacrosse.com. Follow us on Twitter. He's at QKasnick. I'm at Terrence Foy. If you like what you hear, obviously, as always, leave a rating and review. Subscribe, whether it's on iTunes or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Check out the In the Crease podcast with Kyle Devitt and Dan Abern tomorrow. Tell a friend and hit us up, like I said, on Twitter. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter. Keep your eyes on the midweek action this week. That Hobart-Syracuse game looms large. As I said earlier, I'll be at Hopkins-Rutgers, part of a doubleheader. Northwestern women, Hopkins women, Saturday, 10 a.m. Early face-off. And then, I should say draw. And then Hopkins and Rutgers, Mike Corey and I will have that call. And what amounts to, that's 2 o'clock on Saturday in a big game. There's a lot of big games around the landscape. So many teams still in the hunt for the NCAA tournament, for league tournaments. It's a great time of the year.
Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check, testing 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.